You do hear people say it all the time. Get kids learning early in life, and it makes a big difference later in life. Spend more on schools young, and you spend less on prisons later. So you can guess the approach favored by the Oregon Community Foundation in the educational programs it funds. Today, we get a chance to explore those programs and get some idea of how close we might be to closing the education opportunity gap. Mary Louise McClintock is the OCF Education Programs Director visiting the Rogue Valley. So here in the studio with me. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
We do hear much about the OCF. It seems like it's in the news all the time about a grant here and a grant there. Give us some idea of the scale of what the Oregon Community Foundation brings in every year and what it puts out every year.
Well, we currently have assets of $1.6 billion. And so that's at any time a combination of funds coming in the door and ongoing earning of interest. And in 2015, we gave out just a little over $100 million in grants and scholarships throughout the state.
Well, so a lot of money coming out of the Oregon Community Foundation. Give us a sense of the educational portion that you have overseen for better than a decade now. Has this grown over time?
It has. Education on the whole is about a third of that giving that I talked about. Grants and scholarships amount in education amount to around $36 million last year. I oversee a portfolio that's smaller than that. It's about $15 million, includes scholarships, and it includes our strategic investments in education across the spectrum, starting at birth and going all the way to access to post-secondary.
So give us a sense of the state of education in Oregon. I mean, we got the graduation rate last week. It doesn't look a whole lot better compared to the national average. And so we clearly have some work to do in the state of Oregon.
Exactly. We're very concerned about the mediocre outcomes we see in our data across the state. As you said, we do rank very low compared to other states. We're in the bottom five with a current on-time graduation rate of about 74%. And when you unpack that and look at the outcomes for different groups of Oregonians, they're worse for students of color. Our graduation rate for white students is actually among the lowest of white graduation outcomes around the country at about 76%. The graduation rate for Latino students is 67%. For African-American students, it's about 64%. And for Native American students in Oregon, it's barely over 50%, which is really quite distressing. We also have one of the lowest rates of college attendance in the country, attendance after high school at two- or four-year institutions by students of college attendance age. And that may have gone up this past year because of the access to the Oregon Promise, the more or less free community college. We haven't seen those numbers yet. But as of last year, our college attendance rate was lower.
Is that believed to be a direct link that the low graduation rate leads to the low higher education
rate? But the college attendance rate is calculated based on those who graduate from high school. And so we're not exactly sure why that is, but it's obviously something that we have to address. And when we look at where we can make a difference as a foundation, we look at where can we strategically target what's compared to the public sector, a relatively limited amount of dollars.
How much advocacy do you do as a foundation? I know there's a limit probably based on structure to what you can do in terms of political movements, but I wonder how much you also talk to legislators about here's what you can do and then we can supplement that at the OCF.
We do that quite a bit. Actually, as a community foundation, we have the ability to take positions on legislation, which private foundations cannot.
Okay.
So we do some lobbying. We do it carefully. We don't jump in on every issue, but education is one of those areas where we have taken positions. And early childhood education is an example of that. We have supported in the last two sessions the legislation and budget allocation for the new state preschool program, Preschool Promise, and we've weighed in on some other early childhood issues as well.
Mary Louise McClintock is the Education Programs Director at the Oregon Community Foundation, or OCF. We're talking about the kinds of focuses that OCF makes to early childhood education in particular. And you can join this discussion on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When you discuss the education opportunity gap, give us a sense of what the gap is and who's on either side of that.
Well, the difference in graduation rates that I just talked mm-hmm. about is one example. We also see it in, there's a rural-urban divide in college attendance. I think chronic absenteeism rates are higher in rural areas than in more urban areas, and then college attendance is lower in rural parts of the state. That probably has something to do with access as well as with income circumstances. So we're concerned about that. Another opportunity gap, if we think of, as you said at the beginning of the program, in talking about the wise investment represented by early childhood education, we know that attendance at a high-quality preschool can change life trajectories, particularly for lower-income children. And we believe that only that about a quarter of lower-income children have access to high-quality preschool in Oregon. So that's a gap that we're really concerned about and working both through our investments and through our public policy work to try to close.
Is the lack of access from lack of money or lack of ability to get to or a combination thereof?
Well, preschool is typically not funded publicly. It's beginning to be more and more as governments everywhere recognize the importance. Parents bear the cost, and it's very expensive. We've been hearing a lot about how high childcare costs. Childcare is preschool as well.
Mm-hmm. And when Oregon's among the highest.
Oregon has one of the biggest affordability gaps for childcare in the country. And it can take as much as a third of a household income to pay for childcare. And often that means the trade-off is in quality. And so that concerns us.
How critical are those first 3 years? It seems so much emphasis goes on birth to 3 years old and just getting young brains started. How important is that period?
Well, it's the most important developmental period for brains. 90% of children's brains are developed by the time they get to kindergarten. There are thousands of neurological connections being built every second for children in the first few years of life. That's when the architecture of either stable or fragile brain architecture is established. And it turns out that one of the most important factors in that early brain development is relationships with adults. And that's one of the reasons that we've invested quite significantly in parenting education to help parents learn how to nurture their children as well as possible, be their children's first and most important teachers, what they can do to help their children be ready for kindergarten, the importance of reading. It's very important for children to hear words and back and forth conversation every day. And we've seen in research that there's a gap in vocabulary as early as 9 and 18 months because of the differences in words that children hear.
And I wonder if you have any longitudinal studies that you have access to, because the question comes to mind about if you're essentially bathing a child in words, no matter the economic circumstances, if a kid from a relatively lower income home and a kid from a more wealthy home, if they still get the same amount of words and vocabulary and read to exposure, if they might end up about the same.
Well, the research has shown that there are differences longer term in IQ and school outcomes, that those gaps in vocabulary access do play out later. There are also many studies of the impacts of high-quality preschool that show that there are long-term impacts. Interestingly and troublingly so, there is a fade-out in many of these studies that children who attend high-quality preschool are more ready for kindergarten than their peers who did not from the same economic circumstances when they get to kindergarten. And then that difference fades out in the first few grades of school, may have something to do with the quality and alignment of the teaching practices in those first grades. We don't really know enough about that. But the studies that have followed children beyond school and into adulthood have found that even if the academic outcomes fade, that the life outcomes are very promising. They're more likely to graduate from high school, more likely to get a good job, pay income taxes, stay out of the criminal justice system. So there's still more work to do on all of that, but we believe the long-term outcomes are pretty persuasive.
So there can be, I mean, even if a child comes to kindergarten not as well prepared as some other children, there can be a bit of a catch-up in that phase?
Well, we certainly know that there are many things that teachers and schools can do to help children catch up. And one of the areas that we've been focusing on is the period starting at birth and all the way to third grade. We'd made some grants to school districts to have what's called a P3 focus in their work, prenatal to grade three. Mm-hmm. There's a great example of that locally at Jackson Elementary School in Medford, where they have a P3 program with a focus not only on getting kids ready for kindergarten, but also making sure that everyone is promoting their ability to be reading at benchmark when they get to third grade, because reading proficiency at third grade is one of the strongest predictors of high school graduation. So it needs to be a laser-like focus.
If one of the greatest lacks, then, is in quality, high-quality preschool for children in Oregon, even if you put dollars into the hands of all parents and allow them to afford those preschools, are there enough slots? I mean, I just wonder, between demand and supply, if both sides really need to come up.
Both sides need to be addressed. Exactly right. We need to help lower-income families access preschool and quality child care through some assistance, but we also need to be working on the demand side by helping more providers get access to training, small business loans to help them upgrade their spaces, and to afford to operate, because even if everyone could afford what child care and preschool programs are now charging, it isn't always enough to stay in business. It's a challenging marketplace in which to operate. So you're right, we do need to look at both sides.
Well, truly. Mary Louise McClintock, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Education Programs Director for the Oregon Community Foundation, OCF. You're welcome to join the conversation. I see a couple of calls on the line now. 800-838-3760 to join in by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Connie in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question. Since I'm 65, so I'm of the generation where most of the women were at home, and so we were all parented or educated at home before kindergarten. And one of the things I've always wondered about is that we were free to roam about our neighborhoods and to interact with all the different adults in our neighborhood, older, younger, as well as all the other kids. And I wonder, when we have a structured preschool like we have now, how that is different in terms of development, the social development or educational development of the child, as opposed to the sort of play-oriented and random interactions that you had with multiple adults in a more of an old-time parenting situation.
Exploring by yourself as opposed to being directed and you're exploring. Good question. Thanks for that,
Connie.
Well, I think one of the things that's different from when you were a child is that more mothers are in the workforce. There are more two-income households, and when there's a single parent, the need to work. So we know that about 60% of Oregon children are in the care of someone other than their parent during the day because one or both of their parents are working. So roaming the neighborhood, even in the best of circumstances, isn't always possible when parents are working all day. And what we're concerned about is making sure that those out-of-home settings are the best that they can be. And actually high-quality care in preschool includes some of those elements that you've just been talking about. The ability to explore, have lots of play options, for children to be able to choose what they're going to be learning and playing with every day, with trained adults who know how to support that play and exploration, and exposure to lots of different adult, consistent, nurturing adult relationships as part of that environment as well.
You mentioned the programs to assist the parents as well that are funded by the Oregon Community Foundation, and I wonder how delicate a move that can be. I mean, if you have parents who are staying home with the kids and they're determined to do good for the kids, they want to raise them, don't want to send them to preschool, et cetera, but you're trying to make sure that they do get more vocabulary exposure, more reading to all that sort of thing. I mean, I have to believe in some cases you might encounter some resistance, like, I know what's best for my kid, stay out of this.
Well, the programs that we've been funding are totally voluntary, and they're range from one-time workshops about something like nurturing literacy in your young child, or conquering challenging bedtime routines, ranging from one-time events and family gatherings all the way to multiple session, 10 or 12-week session classes that help parents build skills and learn how to take care of themselves, learn how to use positive discipline approaches. And we believe that everyone can use some parenting education, that those programs should be available everywhere in the state, and that parents then should be well informed about what's available to them so they can choose.
Are they available all over the state?
They are available all over the state, but not to the extent that we would like to see. We've been funding the development of regional parenting education hubs. The hub in this region for Jackson and Josephine counties is with Southern Oregon Child and Family Council. It's called the Family Connection. Mm-hmm. They're doing an awesome job. They're just in their second year of funding from us. They have a great website that I would recommend that parents check out. It has a calendar of classes, events, all kinds of resources for parents. And we're just thrilled to see that taking root, because that has to be part of the equation.
Mary Louise McClintock, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Education Programs Director for the Oregon Community Foundation, OCF. Here's a call from Sandy in Mount Shasta. Sandy, I would have been surprised if you hadn't called.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I would like to know if you folks have incorporated anything from the ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences Research. I was fortunate enough to, because I listened to Jefferson Exchange, I discovered there a couple weeks ago there was a two-day conference held in Grants Pass that I got to attend, and it was awesome. It was not so much about imparting information as it was about building resources and connecting different people and organizations within the communities of Jackson and Josephine counties. And I'm hoping to bring something like that down here, get it going. Mm-hmm. But so is ACEs a part of you guys?
ACEs and trauma-informed approach. Thanks for that, Sandy.
Yeah.
Right. ACEs standing for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Yes, that's fascinating research that shows that there is a connection between adverse experiences that children have when they're young and later physical and mental health problems, everything from mental illness to diabetes and cancer and heart disease. And so that's increasingly informing our work, school districts, the healthcare field, and I think that we're just going to see the integration of that information more and more. Certainly, investing in parents is a strategy informed by that research, because parents can buffer their children from the effects of stress in family life and economic circumstances through their nurturing approaches. Stronger family bonds can help combat the effects of adverse childhood experiences. And it's that whole field of trauma-informed care is something that we're seeing increasingly. Also, some of our school district partners have received funding from us or others to integrate more of that information into what they're doing. And it's terrific that you're working to bring some of that to your region.
Yeah, Sandy, thanks for the call. Glad you got a chance to attend the Next Now conference that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So ultimately, Mary Louise McClintock, we have a lot of information on how critical early education is. Is the issue then just getting the funds allocated in the right places? Is there just not enough money overall? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the remaining obstacles are, because we have so much knowledge. What still blocks us from being able to use it as well as we could?
Well, certainly we'd like to see more public funding both federal and state into the early childhood system. It's been under-resourced for many years, so that will continue to be part of our agenda. The Preschool Promise program that I mentioned earlier is still very small. It's reaching 1,200 or 1,400 kids around the state. We'd like to see that grow. There are also efforts to that I mentioned earlier for school districts to use funds that they already have and shift their focus so that they are reaching more families early. Families can be partners in with schools and helping their kids get ready for school. It's a combination, I would say, of wanting to see more resources and also having more partnerships between all of the adults and children's lives to help make sure that they're getting what they need.
Do you feel like progress has been made despite what you're seeing in graduation numbers? I mean, since a lot of your focus is early, I understand there are programs that go all the way through college, but I mean, is there progress at the lower age levels?
Oh, I think so. I think that Oregon as a state, both under Governor Kitzhaber and now under Governor Brown, has been making this a priority, and we're seeing increasing attention in communities as well as at the federal level. I think that we're going to see that show up in improvement in outcomes down the road in Oregon and elsewhere. But we also need to keep working at the K through 12 level to make sure our schools are doing a good job.
All right. Mary Louise McClintock is the head of the Oregon Community Foundation's education programs. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right.